and welcome back to the One Goal U.S. Soccer Podcast. I'm Matthew Singer. I'm always joined by George Abinah. George, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful today.
Awesome, man. Today we'll be joined by U.S. Youth International starlet Andrew Carleton, who's been tearing it up with Indy 11 while on loan from Atlanta United. And we'll be talking a little bit of the World Cup qualifying draw and the press conference from Greg Berhalter, which I was able to take part in. So, George, let's just start here. Give me your initial thoughts on the World Cup draw for the U.S. men's national team.
I think when it comes to World Cup qualifying, the simple thing is USA has to qualify, easy as that. Whether it's one game, two games, whatever, USA has to qualify because they're supposed to be the best team, or at least the second best team in Mexico and CONCACAF at any point in time. But immediately when I saw the draw, we knew it was going to be 18 instead of six. But my first thought was it's a lot. It is a lot of games. That is 14 must-win games in World Cup qualifying. And we have the Gold Cup that's going to be thrown in there. You have the Olympics. There's going to be so many games, so many opportunities for players. Everyone can play each game. So I think the biggest thing to look forward to is what are the rosters going to look like? How are they going to be compiled? How are you going to factor in Gold Cup, World Cup qualifying, Olympic qualifying, and the Olympics all in a certain space of time? So I think that's the most interesting thing.
Just to give a quick breakdown of what the situation looks like, we're looking at June 2021 for the winner of either Group A or Group F. We could possibly, for our first game, be facing Trinidad and Tobago, which would be a nice revenge match, or we could be facing off against El Salvador. I was listening to Greg Berhalter today talk about it in his press conference, and he said the Trinidad and Tobago possible matchup would be a nice storyline, but the U.S. is focused on bigger things. So I think it's nice that we're kind of moving past that at some point or another. But my initial thoughts are very similar to yours. I think we should just get going on the first foot and try to qualify as easy as it can be. There's going to be a lot of games, and maybe the opponents are not the best opponents, but that's CONCACAF. You know, you're going to play a lot. It's going to be a gauntlet. We're going to be thrown into it. It's going to be physical. It's going to be a lot from the get-go. So I'm just really excited to get started. And one thing I also want to mention on the press conference with Berhalter, one thing he mentioned was in October, they're hoping to bring in a domestic camp from just people playing in the MLS and maybe even Mexico. And then in November, he'll have some sort of November camp, which will be European-based. And he did also say that there should be two high-level opponents they're looking to play then. And one thing I also thought was interesting when he talks about the CONCACAF qualifiers and how we're getting into the World Cup, he really stressed this idea of seven home games and how that could really be big for us in terms of building a fan base and generating interest in U.S. soccer. So I guess I'm just curious, George, again, your thoughts in general, but kind of where do you think we go from here? You know, obviously we have Trinidad right away, but what does it look like? How do we attack this in terms of squad rotation? And, you know, what does that all look like?
I think this period of time, like I said, there's going to be a lot of games, but that's good because a lot of players are going to get called in. The U.S. is lucky that the World Cup isn't until December 2022, and we have a very young roster right now. When you look at all the guys, you know, people say Brendan Aaronson, James Sands, Ayo Akinola, these names that are hot on the tongues. If the World Cup started tomorrow, those guys probably wouldn't get called up because they aren't experienced. So the USA would lean on a lot of those quote-unquote experienced guys. You know, maybe Omar Gonzalez gets called up if the World Cup starts tomorrow because you know he's been there and you don't want to throw in someone who's not experienced. So with all these games coming up, it's perfect for the U.S. to solidify a roster that will compete in 2022. These guys are going to get games in the red, white, and blue. They're going to get experience, whether that be the Gold Cup, World Cup qualifying, the Olympics. And by the time it's all said and done, after you've played 14 World Cup qualifying games, after you've played Olympic qualifying, after you've played Gold Cup, you're going to have a sense of who the best 23 guys are. And I think that's what I'm most excited for.
Just to add to that, this idea of youth is really just a big encouraging thing for youth soccer. Tim Ream was also on the call, so I was able to hear him talk about a few things. And one of the questions that someone asked was about this idea of youth movement. And he mentioned this really interesting story where when he was on the team, he was brought in for his first cycle. They had this tradition where the youngest guy goes in the middle of the 5-on-1 and they pass the ball around. And he mentioned that he was 30 years old at the time and he was the youngest player. So I think it's really interesting that we see now that the guard is kind of shifting and we have these veteran players like a Tim Ream, like a John Brooks who've been there before. But this idea of youth talent, and we mentioned it on previous podcasts as we keep mentioning it here, but you know, we're cultivating something and the longer it takes for us to get into qualifying is almost a benefit because it keeps our players who are young, gives them more chances to get minutes and break into the first teams like a Richie Ledesma, like a Chris Gloucester or Uli Lanez. And so it's encouraging. And I think it's just a good idea now that we have something to look at and we can say, okay, here's where we have to be ready by this time. And so I think for me, one thing I'm definitely looking at is who are the players that will have enough time to break in by then. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think exactly like I said, who are the players that have enough time to break in? And there are only 10 games in the previous Hex. If there was no Gold Cup, there aren't all these friendlies being set up, we wouldn't really know because there'd be such an emphasis on winning. Maybe those guys don't get opportunities, but there's going to be so many opportunities for guys to play on the international stage. We could be looking at a Gold Cup roster of maybe an average age of 23. We could see that possibly. And if you can't perform at a Gold Cup, you can perform in World Cup qualifying. So some of these guys that we're saying are the next big thing may not pass the Gold Cup test. And then we know maybe we kind of do need to lean on these veterans. So I think it's perfect. There's going to be so many opportunities for players to stake their claim. And I think that's the best possible thing we could see for the national team.
Yeah. And just to add to that, I think the October camp, as much as people like to ignore the January camp, it's all MLS guys. You have to credit Greg Berhalter because he's giving the entire pool a look. Like you mentioned, there is the Gold Cup and there's the October window where you can say, okay, let's bring in these domestic guys, maybe a Chase Gaspar and the guys who have kind of been on the outside who are potential players, but they didn't really have the chance to show Greg Berhalter. And so they give this October camp, and then you add in the November camp, and then you use kind of both of those rosters to figure out who are our guys, and then we move forward into the Ocho, and we really start getting going. So I'm just very encouraged. I'm in a very optimistic mood today, and I'm looking forward to U.S. soccer getting back and getting going. One thing he also added I think was really interesting is he said he talked to Chelsea about Christian Pulisic, and he says that's the club's responsibility, but things are trending in the right way. We think he's going to be okay. And he didn't express any worry over traveling and that kind of stuff. But like you mentioned, there are going to be a lot of games. There's going to be a lot going on. So squad rotation will be important. But when you have so many youth players and so much happening, why not be excited?
It's just an exciting time for U.S. soccer. 2018 World Cup, that was a dark period. We saw some players on the field that looked like they didn't want to be there. Christian Pulisic was trying to do everything he could to save the national team. And I think we're in a period where we see guys who have that hunger. You know, someone like Tyler Adams, who you know could be a future captain. Someone like Weston McKennie could be a future captain. Christian Pulisic, the list goes on and on. You have these guys who have so much hunger to not just be a part of the national team, but to lead the national team, to have success with the national team. So it's just really exciting as a national team fan who's kind of struggled these past couple of years with so much disappointment to have a large group of guys who want to play for the national team and see it as an honor rather than a burden.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree. And it's just, we're so excited. I think you could probably hear it in our voices. We're on the precipice of something interesting for sure. And I think another thing I wanted to just add from the press conference that Tim Ream was asked about the Fulham links for Anthony Robinson, and he stopped short of confirming them. I'm not going to confirm them here. But I think one thing we can talk about, as you mentioned last time, was Anthony Robinson possibly going to Sheffield. And now we're possibly talking about, is Fulham finally done? So it's not for sure that it's done. But I guess if you have any initial thoughts on the possible move to Fulham.
I definitely think I like the Fulham move rather than Sheffield United. Like we said, Enda Stevens started 38 games for Sheffield United at left wing back. He knows the Chris Wilder system like the back of his hand. It would have been very hard for Anthony Robinson to come in and take meaningful games away from him. And it's not ideal at Fulham either. Joe Bryan's their starting left back. He had a man-of-the-match performance in the playoff final with 2 goals. So he's going to the season on form. But I think there's more of a chance for Robinson to dispatch him than he would have had Stevens. And the reason being, with these teams that get promoted, the managers usually have a short leash. They know if they lose games, they are going to be sacked. So if Fulham loses 2-3 games in a row, they're going to put in the sub left back to see how it works. But that might not be the case of Sheffield United. Enda Stevens could play horrible the rest of the season, but Chris Wilder has trusted him for many seasons now. So I think Robinson definitely has a better shot playing meaningful games in the Premier League for Fulham than Sheffield United.
I thought Sheffield was a really good fit in terms of it would expand his ability as a defender. It would allow him to kind of learn more. But like you said, you know, there's an established player ahead of him, and there's still an established player ahead of him at Fulham. But I think talking about a player who's ready for the step up, and like Tim Ream said, and just echoing that sentiment, when some player is ready to move up, there's going to be a challenge in front of him. It's going to be the natural League One, and then the players in front of him too. So I think one, he has to handle the league, and two, he has to beat the player in front of him. So there's no better place to do that than Fulham. Fulham has a history with Americans, so I like that. And with Tim Ream being on 32, he's close to the end of his leash there. So maybe Anthony Robinson is the next star for Fulham in America. So we'll see, but I'm just excited for everything U.S. soccer. Today's been a great day. I'm enjoying myself. And I guess, do you have anything more we should wrap up on there, or should we head over to our interview?
I think we're ready. I'm excited to talk to Andrew Carlton. He was coming up at the same time I was in the DA. So obviously I'm playing my games and I'm just seeing this kid absolutely tearing it apart, playing 3 years up for Georgia United, starting for the youth national team. So yeah, I'm really excited to talk to him.
Do you have any fun stories from your times in the DA? Did you ever have crossovers with him or any players tell you anything about him?
Well, I actually had one of my college teammates, Satchel Corte. He played against Andrew Carlton. He played for PDA. They played against Georgia United. And that Georgia United team had Chris Gosselin, Andrew Carlton, Juan Torres, who's now at NYCFC, Patrick Okonkwo, who's a former LA United homegrown. So very talented team. And I remember watching that game. And obviously, when I got to know Satchel, I asked him, you know, what was it like playing against them? And he just said, they're all good, but that Andrew Carlton kid was different. And yeah. I think just from watching it, I could see that and just talking to someone who played against him. So like I said, I'm very excited to talk to him.
Me too. And just so people know, Carlton, he had a little trouble with Atlanta United getting off the floor, had some off-field issues, but he's really found a home here this year with Indy 11. He started a couple games for them. He's gotten plenty of assists, and his creative flair is really back. So I'm really excited to interview Andrew and hear about all things with his career. So without further ado, I guess, here's our interview with Andrew Carlton. So let's start here. When the pandemic hit, did you stay in Indiana or did you go back home?
So whenever it first hit, you know, there was a lot of confusion around like what was going to happen with the league and like, you know, how long we'd be off for and all that. And so we were given at first just the weekend off. It got canceled on like postponed on like a Thursday. And we were given like Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. So I had drove back to Atlanta, which is about an 8-hour drive, just to spend some time with the family and, you know, see what was going to happen with everything. And then as it kept getting pushed back further and further, you know, at the time, you know, not knowing what was going on with the virus, I didn't feel that it was safe to come back, even though, you know, we were technically supposed to be in our, you know, where our club's at or whatever. But, you know, I just like not knowing what was going on with the virus and everything, I just kind of said, you know, I feel safer just staying at home with my family and everything than, you know, trying to drive all the way back, having to stop everywhere and all that type of stuff. So I stayed in Atlanta for a bit and then came up here, you know, about a month before we got back to like small group training and all that.
Was there any stuff that you were like working on while you were by yourself, just trying to touch around the ball in the house?
I was more focused on like my physical attributes than anything. You know, I'm, you know, not the biggest guy or any of that stuff. So I really took the quarantine to really focus on like being in the gym and stuff like that. I had some like weights back home. And then when I got back up here, it was the same thing. Luckily, Indiana was one of the first states to kind of start opening back up. So our apartment gym was open pretty early. And so I was in there pretty much every day just trying to work on my like physical side of my game.
Nice. That's definitely good to hear. In terms of like coming back with the USL, how has that experience been like?
It's been good for me. You know, my time in Atlanta didn't exactly go how I like planned it to go. And, you know, there are a lot of ups and downs and learning experiences there. And then, you know, getting alone here and getting able to play first team minutes or being able to play with a professional setup and everything here in Indy, it's really been good for me. You know, I've got along here great with the guys, you know, Coach Rennie and the players and everything, you know, took me in with open arms and, you know, made the transition really easy for me. You know, I'm loving it up here with them and, you know, excited to see how the rest of the season goes.
Yeah, you kind of talked about Atlanta. This is your first season, your whole life playing for a club team outside of Georgia. So what was that, you know, kind of decision like, you know, for you to decide to go to Indy 11 and, you know, how is that kind of working for your development right now?
Bro, I was really just at a point where I was like, look, bro, I've been a professional for, what, 3 or 4 years now? I mean, since I was 15 playing in Charleston. And I was really just like, bro, I want to play. Like, I want to be like an environment where I'm competing for a spot and, you know, something that, you know, I have a chance to be able to earn a spot. And, you know, we did have like the second team in Atlanta, but it wasn't like, I mean, there's just so many moving parts there that it wasn't like the same as being in a professional environment where you're fighting for an opportunity. And so that's really one of the reasons why I wanted to go on loan somewhere. And, you know, Indy made that possible. You know, I was looking at MLS teams, but with a lot of, you know, negative stuff about me. I mean, Martin was one of the only coaches that really like took the step and said, yo, like, we'll take them and, you know, we'll look out for them. And, you know, I was really grateful for that. And that was all I wanted, was just an opportunity and somebody that believed in me. And so whenever I talked to Martin on my first phone call, and you know, he was really positive about things and everything. And I was like, yep, like that's where I want to be. Like, I feel comfortable going there. And you know, it's been a great experience so far.
And just to add to that, you mentioned the Atlanta United stuff. Like, what was your mentality going into this season? Obviously it was your first time leaving the Atlanta area of professional soccer. And so what was that kind of experience like, and what were your thoughts going into it?
Bro, I was excited, honestly. You know, I mean, growing up playing soccer, you know, I played every single day, multiple times a day growing up as a kid. And just being able to, like, the past couple of years, I haven't had that same, like, joy about the game where, like, I almost, like, fell out of love with the game pretty much because of, like, everything going on in my career at the time. And, you know, coming into this season, I was like, you know, like, I'm just going to go and enjoy playing soccer and, like, go back to, like, the old me that used to have fun with it all the time. And, you know, take the stress of, like, you know, proving certain people this and that about myself and just going out and playing soccer, how, like, the game's meant to be played. And that was my focus coming into this year, because I know whenever I play like I know I can and whenever I'm happy playing the game, that's whenever I'm at my best.
And I think that's kind of part of a bigger conversation. It goes hand in hand with how coaches in U.S. soccer don't like players having a lot of flair. Everything just seems so structured. I remember Sporting Kansas City had Josh Sargent's rights, even though he had never even been their academy. So I guess, how do you feel about the structured nature of U.S. soccer?
I mean, you pretty much tell any coach that you have growing up to, nah, I'm not going to listen to what you're saying. I mean, it sounds pretty messed up, but being an American player growing up in the American system, you almost got to have that, like, overconfident attitude about yourself to say, like, no, like, you're wrong. Like, this is how the game's meant to be played. If, like, you personally ever think somebody told Neymar, like, yo, bro, stop doing all these skills. Like, stop trying to beat people or stop trying to, like, do this. Yes, there's a time and a place for it, but as a kid growing up, you can't be more worried about, you know, losing a game compared to, like, or losing a ball compared to learning a skill or learning a trick or getting out of a tight situation. I think that's one of the main things we lack in this country is that, like, creative, like, get out of play, get out of pressure. We're so, like, focused on, you know, tactical stuff, or, like, you know, whenever you're in this part of the field, you only play two touch or blah, blah, blah. Some of the best players in the world take the right amount of touches whenever it's time to take the right amount of touches and play two touch, one touch whenever it's the right situation. And I think that's one of the big things we lack in this country, to be honest with you.
Definitely. I guess for you, you talk about this creativity. Where did your playing style, like, come about? Who did you look up to when you were a kid?
Messi was always my idol growing up. Neymar shortly after that as well. And, you know, I was growing up, I had this personal trainer. When I was homeschooled, I would, like, train with him in the mornings and then do homeschool and then train at night as well with my, like, club team. And he's a dude from Trinidad, named Garvin Quimina. Great dude, like, one of the best people I've ever met. And, you know, we used to just work every morning on, like, skill and on, like, getting out of tight situations and finishing and, like, attacking third stuff. And that's really where I got, like, you know, tricks and flair. And that's where, like, the style of play comes from. You know, just watching those guys, like, they, like, Messi and them, they get paid money to score and create goals. Nobody cares if they give the ball away 10 or 15 times a game. If they score a goal and have an assist, nobody's talking about that. I think that's one of the things that's, like, overlooked here in this country is that, bro, Alexis Sanchez, and, like, if you look at him at Arsenal, whenever he was really, like, doing his thing, he would give the ball away 15, 20 times a game, but he'd have a goal and an assist, and nobody would care. If, like, you're in, like, a, you know, youth national team or something here, you give the ball away 10 times, but you get a goal, and everybody's like, oh, but he gave the ball away 10 times. Nobody cares. Like, my job as an attacking player is to score and create. It's not about completing 50 passes a game.
You know, you say they get mad at you if you give the ball away 50 times for a goal, but you paint a problem with that 2000 age group. You look at your success at the U17 World Cup, World Cup qualifying, Nike friendlies. Like, the list goes on. So, you know, what was that experience like? And were they telling you you were giving the ball too much and stuff like that?
So I have an interesting story about, like, my U17 national team head coach. He was John Hackworth. He coached now at Louisville, who we play every couple weeks here. But so our first ever practice with him, we were probably about 15 or 16 at that time. We were playing small sided, and the keeper hit me, like, a long ball, not a long ball, because it's small side, but, like, a ball kind of over the top. And I tried to pass it with my back to this one dude who was like running onto the ball. And it almost worked out, but it didn't. And then later that night at dinner, my coach came up to me and he was like, what were you even like trying to do on that play? Like, why would you pass it with your back? Or like, what was that? And I was like, I mean, I saw Ronaldo do it like last week. So I was like, I might as well try it. And then like 6 months later after that, we were playing Jamaica down in Kingston and just in like a friendly game, and somebody switched me the ball, probably like a 60, 70 yard ball. And I passed it with my back to Chris Gloucester over the dude's head, and he crossed it in and we almost scored. And he came up to me after and I can't remember exactly what he said, but he said something like, oh, I see why you're working on that trick. And so Hackworth has actually been one of my like favorite coach I've ever had, because he does give you that, he'll question it sometimes, but a lot less than most people. But it's like, it's those little things in training that like, bro, they're so important. And I feel like most coaches would have been like, yeah, Andrew, like, screw you, get out of here, you pass it with your back. And bro, those are the little things. Nobody's ever told Neymar, don't try that. Nobody's ever told Ronaldo, don't try that. And that's why they're there. It's because they believe in themselves.
That's a really good memory, definitely. Do you have any other really fun national team stories you could share with us?
I have too many to really count, to be honest. One of the funny stories, I guess it's kind of funny. You kind of got to be there. But I remember we used to go to school down at IMG for like in Bradenton for like the residency program and stuff. And so we would go to school there, and like a lot of the kids there were like foreign kids, a lot of like South American kids. And so anyway, to give you another backstory on it, all the IMG kids hated the residency soccer team, the US team, because like we were there living for free basically, and they had to pay, and I don't know, they just didn't like us. It was like always like that. And I remember we were playing Brazil in the Nike friendlies. It wasn't the final, but it was like the winner won the tournament, the round robin tournament or whatever. And almost every one of the like IMG kids like came out to like watch the game, and like they had like a Brazil like section. Everybody's wearing like yellow shirts and clothes, and they brought like confetti and all that stuff. And I remember we smashed them 3-0. And I remember every time we would score, we would just go up to them and like be like, shh. And then Brazil like a couple months later ended up making it to the World Cup final or semifinal or something like that. But it was a pretty cool story.
I actually remember that because I was there, because that's when, you know, like, you know, the DA does a little showcase. So I remember watching that, and we pulled up and we see a big Brazil fan section. And so we were wondering.
All of them went to IMG.
Yeah, 4 years later, I finally got my answer. So thanks for that. And, you know, you talk about that team. You guys absolutely dominated a team like Brazil, went to the World Cup, lost to England, who ended up winning. You know, there's so many names on that team. Weah, Sargent, Jorginho, even guys near the radar now, you know, like James Sands. So who on that team, maybe even guys who are at residency, who some people might not know about, do you think, you know, we should be on the lookout for?
Bro, there are so many good players on that roster, bro. There's guys that even weren't on that roster that are now doing big things. I really think that was the best, like, residency group ever by, like, far. If we didn't play England, we would have definitely played them in the finals. Like, us and England were the two best teams, hands down. And I'm going to just say one thing that's, I mean, it's kind of like, if you look at all the guys on that team who went to Europe and the guys who stayed in MLS and just take a look at where they're at in their careers, I think it says a lot about youth development and that type of stuff. That's all I'll say to the question, but I think it says a lot, because there were dudes that did go overseas that were nowhere near as talented as some of the players that stayed stateside.
Just adding on to that, feel free, if you don't want to answer, you don't have to answer this, but I know you spent a little time training with Manchester City before you committed to Atlanta United. So do you kind of regret that decision a little bit, or how do you kind of deal with that now?
So with the whole Man City thing, I was there when I was 13 and 14. I was on the same team as Phil Foden. I remember me and him used to go at it. We were best friends. We went to school together, and we used to go at it every day in training. And I remember there was a tournament we played against, like, Ajax, and Serginho was actually on that Ajax team, believe it or not, and like Benfica, Inter Milan, a whole bunch of big name teams. And I remember he won best player, Phil won best player of the tournament, and I won best midfielder of the tournament there, which is a pretty cool thing. Me and him were best friends. It was a pretty cool story. But so I was 13, 14 around there. But so they had offered me an academy contract to move over, but I legally couldn't because I didn't have a European passport or anything like that. My whole family had to move over, and I have two brothers and two sisters. It was just too much to do. So our plan with that was for New York City was coming out like a year or two later, and I was going to sign with them and be a homegrown there because of the like discovery rights or whatever. Man City were saying that they found me and were giving them to New York City. And then like, so I'd train there until I'm like 16 or 18, whenever I was legally allowed to move over, and then go back over to Man City if it was still available and all that. But then right as New York City came out, Atlanta United was announced that they were going to have a team in a couple years. And so when that happened, then that pretty much, like, since I was playing for Georgia United's academy team that became Atlanta United's academy team, they technically owned my rights and I wasn't allowed to go to New York City. There was like a big, not big, but me and my agent were going back and forth with the New York people trying to like figure out if it was still possible or not. Not saying that I would have signed there. At the time, I was really excited about signing for Atlanta, but just to like keep options open and everything.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of part of a bigger conversation. And I think it goes hand in hand. You talked about how, you know, coaches and U.S. soccer, they don't want players to have a lot of flair. Everything just seems so structured. Like, even saw, I remember it was Sporting Kansas City that had Josh Sargent's rights, even though Josh had never even looked at Sporting Kansas City in the slightest. So how do you feel about the structure of U.S. soccer compared to other countries where it's so free flow and you kind of do what you want, what's best for you, but it almost seems like U.S. soccer, they try and like put you in these certain spaces and don't like you have that freedom?
I don't completely understand the logic behind a lot of the situate, like around a lot of the rules, other than just to like keep the talent equally divided everywhere. I mean, if you go overseas and stuff like that, like Man City doesn't have homegrown rights to Man U play, or like somebody that wants to go play for Man U, like it just doesn't work like that. Like if I sign a contract to play at Atlanta United as a 14-year-old and the academy team, then I honor that right for a year. And after that, I'm able to go play wherever I want to go play. If you're in like an MLS team that like isn't looking to give young players a chance, I mean, example for like myself, if I'm in Atlanta and I'm a 15-year-old kid and I've seen the past couple of years they've signed guys like Barco and Pitti and Almiron and these type of players, and I'm looking at it like, dang, like I'm not going to be able to get a real opportunity until I'm, you know, 20, 21, 22 years old, then I would want to look into other options. If I can't go overseas, then what other options do I have? That's one of the things I'm working with my little brother right now, who plays in the Atlanta Academy team, is that like he can't move overseas until he's 18. So what does he do if he doesn't want to sign for Atlanta? I'm not saying he wants to or doesn't want to, but if the opportunity came, like, what other option do you have? Do you just sit around and wait? But Atlanta has his homegrown right, so it's like there's just so many different rules that almost just a player gets trapped in a system until they're 22 years old.
Yeah, at that point you're kind of stuck, right?
Yeah, you're trapped.
Exactly.
You just got to deal with what it is.
Definitely. I know there's been a lot of talk about, you know, in terms of for you, like what's going on off the field and trying to prove haters wrong. In terms of like what's going on with your mind, do you think of it in terms of like, oh, I'm using this as my motivation, or are you just kind of more focused on yourself at this point?
I spend a lot of time focusing on myself and like trying to refine myself. I struggled with a lot of like, is soccer really what I'm supposed to be doing right now? Because it's, I mean, I'm a big like godly, like religious person. I sat there for like night after night. Like I was so successful growing up, and now it feels like I've just hit rock bottom pretty much. Like I lost the desire to play soccer, to show up. And you know, it's one thing I want to be like open and honest about, it because I feel like a lot of kids, like young players, go through this, and there's not a lot of people that are open to talking about it. But as a young player, like not getting opportunities to play and like feeling like you deserve it, can knock you around. And that's really what I went through. And, you know, it was tough to find that, like, appreciation for soccer. Like, you just feel like, as I said, you're trapped or you're just standing still and life's just kind of passing you by. And so really, I just kind of found myself and just was like, you know, I'm just going to play soccer like I was growing up and just find that, like, love for the game and, you know, not care, but stop stressing so much about what you can't control. And so I just focused on myself and, like, bettered myself. And I, like, was like, you know what? It's God's plan. Like, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And his timing is perfect. And whenever my opportunity comes, I'm going to take that opportunity.
So, yeah, with all of that, obviously, like you said, there's so many people who have different ideas about this or that. And that can be tough on a young player. So right now, you know, with this platform, there's going to be U.S. soccer fans listening to this. What do you want to tell them from your mouth that they can't hear from anyone else but you?
I'd tell them that I'm the same exact player I was whenever I was 17, 18, 16 years old, whenever everybody was really excited about me coming up. I would tell them, yes, I've made very many dumb decisions, but it's not any different than what a regular 18, 19, 20 year old would do. And at the time I was so disappointed in how soccer was going that I did. And I surrounded myself with the wrong people. And I would say that I'm the most mature 20 year old you're ever going to see now because of those mistakes that I've made, and that I don't regret what happened, and that I'm super excited about, like, what's going to come next, because I know, like, learning from those mistakes and everything, that it's going to benefit me so much more going forward.
Awesome. That's really good to hear. I'm glad you've, you know, found some inner peace and able to kind of move forward with it, which is great to hear.
Yeah. And I would just say with that, you talk about these mistakes, but you've seen guys you signed with Atlanta United, like Patrick Okonkwo, Chris Bosslin. Those guys were let go, and technically you're still under Atlanta United's book. So what's kind of like that to you, that even after all this, they still have that faith in you where they want you to get better, they want you to be that player they signed?
I mean, Chris Bosslin and Patrick Okonkwo are my two best friends. And so I don't think it's just random that I was that got in trouble and that they just happened to be released, just because they were never given they weren't given an opportunity that they deserved. And yeah, bro, they're two really good players. I can't say a whole lot on the situation, but they deserve, I mean, Patrick's looking for a team now and he deserves to be able to get a USL opportunity somewhere. He's a really good striker, very athletic dude. And I wish the best for him. Those are two of my best friends.
I guess another question I have, you talk about the national team, like you were a young national team star, and, you know, there's been a lot of youth involvement in the national team. Do you have any national team aspirations, whether that be for the full men's national team or the upcoming Olympic cycle?
Yeah, I mean, right now the way that international soccer works, that if you're playing good at your club and you're at a decent club, then you get those national team looks. And so for me, I'm trying to focus, you know, on my time here in Indy, and see what happens next season, and focus on my, like, club soccer right now before I take that step looking into national team stuff, just taking it, like, one step at a time.
Definitely. You talk about club team. You know, when I was watching the MLS's back tournament, Atlanta United was really missing a creative spark that I feel like you definitely could have provided. So when you're watching that, like, what do you think about, and how do you kind of picture yourself going back to Atlanta United? How do you see this whole thing working out?
Again, I'm just trying to take it one step at a time. You know, I'm not going to jump to a conclusion. I definitely, like, watched a couple of the Atlanta United games, and, you know, they were really missing that, like, that last piece, or that, I think they're missing Yosef more than anything. You know, they didn't have somebody to, like, I mean, here in Indy, we got Tyler Pascher, you know, I got somebody I can find every single time and know that he's going to be there. I think that without having that guy there, that a lot of times you second guess your decision. And I think that's what, like, Pitti and Barco were almost looking to try to overdo things too much themselves, because they didn't have somebody else there to, like, help them through it.
And just for you, you talk about having a guy to play it up to. Where do you see your best position? Obviously, you've excelled on the wing. You can play inside, and you even played a little bit as a false nine. So where do you see yourself?
My best position, I think, personally, is that number 10 role, and just having, like, kind of like in that Louisville game that we played a couple weeks ago, just having that freedom just to, like, pop out in wide areas, like, just the freedom to be able to roam. One of the cool things I like about playing here with, like, Tyler and Illich, is just that, like, freedom that we have between the three of us. You know, we're all pretty similar players, but have, like, different attributes at the same time. So being able to like play off each other and find those different spaces and know that like, all right, if I make this run here and it doesn't come off, that somebody else is going to fill in my spot. I mean, I enjoy playing out wide left a lot as well, but I think number 10 is my best position.
So just in terms of everything, whether it's Atlanta United national team positionally, whatever you want to do after soccer anyways, in 5 years, where do you see yourself? What's your ideal spot as a 25-year-old?
In 5 years, I'd like to be playing in Europe somewhere. Scoring goals, making assists. And I actually have, talking about like stuff after soccer, I have my own clothing line that I'm trying to start up, hopefully coming out next year at some point. So hopefully that's up and running by then too.
Feel free to send us some merch. We'll wrap it on the podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
On all our social medias, like you got it.
We got a couple fun questions before we wrap up, if you don't mind. Again, you're talking about Atlanta. Give me your top five Atlanta rappers.
So like my five like all-time favorites have to be Lil Baby. I think he's the best in the game right now. Gunna. The Migos, not like at this moment, but they were like growing up, you know, they were one of my like idols that I looked up to. Future's got to be in that mix.
I agree.
Who is one that's like an undercover dude that like not a lot of people know? I love Lil Key to spy, but I got a special shout out to my boy. His name's 1-800-TOMMY. Whenever you guys see him sometime soon, y'all will look back at this and be like, Andrew knew what he was talking about. It's some of the best music I think I've ever heard in my life, and he has nothing out yet.
Is he gonna come on the pod next time with you? You can back
on. Yeah, he'll probably, if I get back on when I'm back in Atlanta, I'll make sure to bring him on as well.
All right, awesome, man.
That's what we're all about. We wanna give people the time to shine. We're gonna get Patrick Okonkwo on, we're gonna get 1-800-TOMMY on. Andrew Carlton has all the hookups. He's got us.
Yeah. I'll put it all in. Don't worry about it.
Dude, thanks so much for coming on. We really enjoyed the conversation. It was glad you're doing well, and I'm glad to see you doing well on the field as well. So best of luck with everything, and we'll keep watching for you.
For sure. I appreciate the time, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Well, that'll do it for our interview with Andrew Carlton. A special thanks to Indy 11 and Andrew for his time. George, do you have any final thoughts on our interview with Andrew?
I think it's just very evident that he's still hungry. He wants to prove people wrong. He's ready to fulfill his potential and get back to doing great things.
Andrew Carlton, remember the name, all right? And that'll wrap it up for this episode of the One Goal U.S. Soccer Podcast. I'm Matt Singer. That's George Abanon. Thanks for listening. Please rate, review, and subscribe, and we'll be back next week. Thanks again. Take care.